And welcome to Slackerwood Podcast number 6. Wow, we're up to number 6. This is Jet Kernion. I'm here with Chris Holland, and we have a guest today, Tim League from Alamo Draft House. And we are here, we are actually standing in one of the theaters at Alamo Ritz, which was a year old last month, and we will be talking about that.
Yes, we will. But first, the news.
But first, the critical Austin film news. South by Southwest announced its opening night film this week, I Love You Man, starring Paul Rudd and somebody else I can't remember, who was very funny because I caught it at Butnumathon, and I laughed a lot at 3 a.m., so
there you go.
Didn't fall asleep. That's a good sign.
So long as they show it at 3 a.m., I think everyone's good.
So long as they show it at 3 a.m. I actually think this is the kind of comedy that does beautifully at South by with the Paramount. You know, like Forgetting Sarah Marshall or Knocked Up.
I think it fits perfectly in the sort of their tradition of big fun movies for opening night.
Yeah. In other news, Austin Film Critics Association announced its awards this week.
Of which you are a member.
Of which I am a member. Best Picture went to The Dark Knight.
Really?
Yes, really.
Really?
We like our Batman.
I guess you do. I guess you do.
They picked up 5 awards, actually, including screenplay, score, and supporting actor for Heath Ledger.
You know, I'll admit I have paid absolutely no attention to the awards this season. Has that been reflected in the Globes, or they haven't announced the Oscars yet, Oscar noms yet?
So. They have not. Globes are different because they're split into that comedy and drama thing.
Right.
But
Batman is a comedy.
I just put my top 10 list together last night, and I must say that Batman didn't make my top 10.
Yeah,
that's just how I feel about it. So I get flack about that from time to time.
I'm with you. I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was, you know, I saw it twice, but I don't know, best movie of the year, not for me. Anyway, so there was another award.
We also picked best Austin film, and that went to the documentary Crawford,
which I'm going to have to give props for.
Yes.
Not only does B-Side, the company I work for, distribute it, but I just think David Modigliani, the director, is an awesome guy. And he's really gone sort of above and beyond when it comes to promoting his film and sort of giving back to the community of Crawford. They did a Rolling Road show over the summer type. It wasn't part of the Rolling Road show program, but it was Crawford in Crawford, because Crawford doesn't have a movie theater. You knew that. But
that makes our second show that we've done in Crawford.
Really? What was the first?
Fahrenheit 9/11, for the same reason.
Oh, wow. Really?
Okay. They wanted to show the studio wanted to show it in Bush's hometown, and we couldn't resist that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. But you guys showed it here in Austin too, didn't
we? We showed both Fahrenheit 9/11 and Crawford. Yeah. We supported it at a couple different theaters.
Yeah. So that actually is available on Hulu and Netflix, and it has a theatrical window coming up for inauguration. You'll be able to host your own screening of that. So
cool.
Google Crawford movie, and you should be able to find the details on that.
Great. Last bit of news is about a locally made film about a local filmmaker. This is Zombie Girl, which played Fantastic Fest, and is about teenage filmmaker Emily Higgins, who made Pathogen when she was, 12?
Yeah. I think it's equally about Megan Higgins.
Yeah, it is. Mom. I would not argue with that.
Sort of the give and take between those two people as this movie is birthed.
It is playing Slam Dance in January, so that's nice for them.
That's awesome.
I think it's great.
I'm actually looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And I hope Megan and Emily will be able to be there. There's, I don't know.
Oh,
their travel plans are kind of up in the air, but it would be really cool to have to, you know, for Emily, especially, to be a filmmaker with a film, you know, about her at, you know, sort of the largest film party in the world going on at that point. So, that's the end of the news?
That's the end of our news for the moment. Let's move on to the fun part.
So, A Year of the Ritz. Thoughts? No. I have two first things I saw at the Ritz stories. The first one was during Fantastic Fest of 2007, which was sort of the impromptu champagne splitting, what do you call it? Champagne busting ceremony.
What is that? It's a christening?
Christening, yes. Christening, and that went oh so well. How many injuries were there from that?
There was a couple, if you count mine. I'm not really going to count my injury. But if you still go into Theater 2, there's a big gouge in the concrete where we thought it was a good idea to smash it against the newly poured concrete steps, which I kept it as a little memento of a possible bad idea.
Sure. And then the other was the opening night, the triple feature, which was Matango, There Will Be Blood.
No Country for Old Men.
The other Marfa film, sorry. They're mixed up in my head. And War of the Gargantuas, which that is in my top 10 films of all time, quite honestly. And Zach in a pink gorilla suit.
I saw that. I remember that. Well, you know the story. That's the night before my birthday. And for my birthday, Chip talked to Tim, and we had a picnic in Theater 2.
So no secret that we're huge fans of the Ritz.
Yes.
So a year later, is it everything you expected it would be, Tim?
We're pretty happy with it. All told, there were concerns, obviously, moving to Sixth Street. You know, for people here in Austin, there's a certain segment of the population that has stopped coming to Sixth Street because of certain stigmas. Either it's too much of a party street or it's the wrong kind of crowd, whatever. And we're coming from the Warehouse District, which is a very highfalutin, probably the fanciest neighborhood in town, where we're certainly the ugliest dog in the neighborhood. But I don't think we really lost too much of our audience in coming over here, and we've also found a new audience of younger people and also the downtown community that's growing, the residential community. So business is way up over last year, and we've managed to keep our programming relatively intact from the Colorado Street location.
That's actually something that surprised me, and I remember hearing that you're going to be doing first-run movies here and thinking, gosh, is that going to interfere with the specialty stuff? But it really hasn't. You guys have done a nice job of keeping that up. Are there challenges between, you know, sort of the traditional Weird Night Wednesday crowd and the people who are showing up to see the 10 p.m. showing of Milk or whatever?
The only challenge really is that the lobby isn't too terribly big, and sometimes we have two very different audiences in the lobby at the same time, but they're both relatively benign, you know, non-angry folks, so...
So my dreams of your tales of fisticuffs between highbrow cinema buffs and Godzilla fans, you're
that
telling me...
That happened a little on Colorado, too. Sometimes you'd have one coming in and one going out or something.
So as of yet, no fisticuffs, not even with the Friday and Saturday night 6th Street crowd of, you know, drunken buffoons at the shot bars. You know, I think people are getting to understand that this district gets a little crazy at night at 11 o'clock or midnight on Friday and Saturday. But at 7 o'clock, it's actually pretty easy to find parking, and, you know, it's a fairly sedate neighborhood around that time.
And you sacrificed the lobby room to make room for the beer coolers, so I'm thinking... Not too many complaints there, which is actually a difference between one of the other locations and this one. This one serves hard liquor. Mm-hmm. It's the only one, correct?
Correct, at this point. Downtown's always been something of an incubator, sort of a beta test module for things that we may or may not do at other stores. And who knows, we might actually branch out to the other locations and start serving liquor as well.
Well, that hasn't caused any problems, I take it.
No, I mean, the problems come into play if you're over-serving people or if drinks are, you know, 50-cent drinks or something like that. But we've decided to keep a relatively high-profile liquor back bar and not go for the cheap angle.
Oh, so my dreams of 50-cent margaritas, well, we'll have to...
Maybe you just got to come to me directly. I'm always willing to take care of special requests.
You had any... what's been surprising... here, anything surprise you, either a good surprise or the nasty kind, since you've opened or in the process of opening?
One good thing is, in general, except on rare instances, it's been relatively quiet. We suffered from some noise pollution at the 4th and Colorado location because there are, you know, the neighbors up on Speakeasy Deck, and when people had outside patio decks and they're just coming straight at your building, the noise would bleed through. And actually, in general, it's a lot more quiet here, even though that was one of our biggest concerns. Part of it is this is an old theater building, so it was built a little better. And then we reinforce what was here. So that's, I mean, that's not a very exciting surprise, is it? I think the support of the neighborhood. I mean, the neighborhood has actually been great. I never really got to be a part of the community, I think, over in 4th and Colorado. Mm-hmm. Never really had much outreach, nor did I outreach much. But in our first couple of weeks, a lot of business owners and bar owners and restaurant owners came by and said hello. And we, you know, I'm part of their business organization now. So they embraced us with open arms, whereas there, I really didn't have that feeling over the old neighborhood.
No fruit baskets in the warehouse district.
No, not really.
That's too bad. Do you miss anything about the old location?
You know, I remember very clearly the last night at the Alamo, and I was fully anticipating being very emotional. You know, I cry all the time at movies, like all the time, and I can get sort of overly emotional about those sort of things. But I actually didn't shed a tear on the closing night, and I think it's because we were so excited about getting into an actual historic theater. The facility, I mean, certainly I had 10 years of really great memories, and I think about those a lot. And we wouldn't be here today if we didn't do what we did over on Colorado Street. But we built that place so cheaply, and we didn't have any money when we started off. And by the end of 10 years, almost everything was broken. You know, the roof was leaking like a sieve. The electrical needed to be redone. Like, everything that we did on a budget had less than a 10-year lifespan. So I was so ready to get rid of the frustrations of the actual facility. And it was important that the things that we might have missed, you know, the elements of the programming, sort of the attitude of the theater, were maintained. So no, I actually don't really miss anything about the old spot, because I think we successfully transitioned over here.
Have you been over there now that it's a high-end bottle bar?
Yes, I have. I've been a few times. I went on their opening night, and, you know, people had told me, too, like, oh, I mean, we're going to boycott that place, you know, shame on them. But it really wasn't them. You know, it was a situation with the neighborhood got fancier, and the landlord could get much higher rent than he was charging us. So I don't begrudge anybody that decision. So, however, it's not really my scene. I thought it was really bizarre to go there and hang out and see what they had kept and what they had not kept. The stairs are the same, you know, there's certain elements. And if you go down the back stairwell, if you can sneak back, you can still see a lot of the graffiti that was done by my staff and various guests throughout the year. But yeah, that's not my crowd. I don't often go to a high-end bottle service bar. So I haven't been for many, many months.
So do you have a 10-year plan for the Ritz? I mean, are there things that you'd like to, innovations you'd like to see made, or things you're planning to do differently now that you've had a year of experience?
As far as the Ritz, I don't know if there's a 10-year plan as such. Sure. I mean, we think about ideas on how we're going to grow as a company and what we're going to try to accomplish as a company. But this facility, I think, will always be the spot where when we have a new idea, this is where we're going to test it out, launch it, and refine it. That goes from menu to drink ideas to programming ideas to just the overall experience of the audience. And some of those things will translate across the company, and some of them will just be right here at the Ritz. So 10 years, that's an awful long time for a plan.
Let's talk about some more immediate plans for the company.
Sure.
There's something going on with the Village. I hear rumors.
There's still rumors at this point. We were hot and heavy on a Village remodel before the banking crisis, but they've redone a section of the center, the very front chunk. There's a new bar, and they reskinned a couple of things. I don't think they have any more money. You know, I don't think that's happening. So until the banking crisis smooths over and they get financing again, I think that project is on hold. We really want to. The idea was to build a new facility and then transition over there on the same property, just a different location.
Now, can you sort of outline, I mean, this is stuff that I think people sort of infer after a while, but never really gets spelled out. Can you outline a little bit about your relationship between each of the facilities?
Sure. I guess, first of all, I'm the founder of the company. My wife and I started it in 1997. About 4.5 years ago, when the company consisted of the Lake Creek Cinema, the Village Cinema, and the 4th and Colorado Street Cinema, We ended up selling the franchise company. It's a very complicated arrangement because they actually own the brand, licensed back to me for my three locations. And so subsequent openings in, you know, San Antonio and the two Houston franchises have been through their company. And, you know, frankly, I mean, we share the same name, but I really actually don't have any involvement in the day-to-day operation of those businesses, nor do I have any operation in the, you know, the future branding of those. I mean, that may change down the road, but as it is right now, I take care of the Village, the Ritz, and the South Lamar locations, and you know, handle other projects like Fantastic Fest and the Rolling Road Show and things like that.
Cool.
We've seen a lot. I'm going to get a sentence at. We've seen a lot of events here at Ritz in the past year. Are there any one or two that you were particularly happy you were able to bring here, particularly fond of?
Let's see. It's silly, but this is one of the events that we are going to be expanding in 2009. But the Air Sex World Championships were held here once every 2 months.
I should have known.
I like it because it was just just a dumb idea that somebody sent us a YouTube clip and it turned into this sort of franchise entity that now has its own website. And we're going to go on a 18-city worldwide tour starting in May.
Nice. I went to the one at the Paramount.
Yeah.
Fantastic Fest. That's my only air sex experience.
And they were not happy with that, by the way. It was very weird that it was at the
Paramount. But, yeah.
Yes, and that is the last time that particular show will be at the Paramount. It was maybe a little bit further than they wanted to go.
I think that actually is sort of a tangent, but I think that's one of the most positive things that I saw come out of the move to the Ritz was the ability to accommodate some more of the non-Alamo film festivals going on. I think South by Southwest certainly benefited from, you know, an extra two screens downtown. I know Austin Film Festival, you know, having another screen downtown was incredibly important to them. And Aglif was entirely here, right?
Yeah, they had Aglif here this year.
So I think you've got a lot to be proud of there.
I'm really happy because we, you know, it's been a long time since we've worked with Austin Film Festival, and that went very smooth this year, and we're looking forward to going working with them next year. Same thing with Aglif. And for whatever reason, we just hadn't worked with Aglif except on very small individual events, and I really enjoyed working with them this year. So.
Yeah, I think they got a lot out of it, too. There was a lot of positive experiences from that, especially since so many of their parties were downtown anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hike from the Arbor, as much as we all love the Arbor, mm-hmm. it's just not ideally located for that event.
Well, the only problem was that South by Southwest was that all the out-of-town people wanted to come here. They would have gone and seen somebody read the phone book here, and it was very hard to get into some of the movies.
Yeah, especially the small theater.
It needs to be larger. These theaters need to be larger. I'm like, oh, yeah, we'll tell them that they need to make the theater giant.
I can tell them that
year.
I squeezed every available inch out of usable space from this building.
Yeah, you should have. A large part of that space was devoted to the beer coolers in the kitchen, and obviously the fact that there is beer and food here is a large part of the Alamo success. But you also opened a little window out front, I think, for the Sixth Street crowd. Glass Stand at the Alamo,
right.
Is that what it's called? How has that been successful, or how's that working out?
Well, it was successful during busy times like South by Southwest, but to be perfectly frank, and this is a comment of our own execution, we just didn't do it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hustled and put something together for South by Southwest so we'd be open, and that worked. But then we kept it open for maybe a month or two afterwards, and it just wasn't quite what we wanted. And it's still going to happen at some point. We decided to close it down for the time being, work out a better concept, and take our time to execute it and actually get a good designer in to really focus on it. I think it can work, and I like the idea of having something up front, but I wasn't happy with what we did, so we shut it down. We're going to regroup and relaunch it at some point.
And that's
so smart. We may be seeing it at South by in 09?
You know, I don't know, because I don't want to do the exact same thing that I did, which was hustle up and get something ready for South by.
Yeah.
If anything, we'll open it back up for South by as is.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got some silly ideas that might take some permitting and some design work to get it done properly. I want to see it done really, really well. And there's too many makeshift food windows on Sixth Street, and I don't want to be another one of those.
That's a good point. You mentioned that this is sort of the incubator for new food ideas and whatnot. We've definitely seen some of those branch out into the other, like the green chili mac and cheese. We're going to talk about food now.
The mac and cheese.
It's a subject dear to my heart, obviously. But I think that was a real success, and there have been other things. Has anything flopped? And I realize this is more like Trish and John's bailiwick, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's things that we like that don't sell and eventually get taken off of the menu, like the deep-fried pork chop I like, but it's not selling well enough, and the steak plate, although I liked it, isn't going to stay on the menu, probably. I don't think there's been any disastrous failures. I mean, we have new menu meetings once a month with all three of the chefs and, you know, select few
people. Who are those chefs?
John Bullington is the head chef of the whole company, but he's also the executive chef of South Lamar, and then Trish Eichelberger here, and then, oh god, I'm spacing out on Egg Village. That's really bad of me. I forget.
Then we can go back and...
Yeah, I'll tell you later, yeah. So they each control their own stores, but then they work collaboratively on new menu items, and lately we've been... trying to keep some level of standardization between the three stores as to launching new menu items once a month.
Cool. Any wacky upcoming menu items we should know about? I know you do specialty ones for certain shows.
We had some conversations about trying to do something for The Wrestler, but that really didn't make much sense.
There's
a lot of beef involved. That's all I do.
Oh, like deli food? That's frightening.
The process basically is we look at either usually upcoming new release movies, and we think, is there anything that can tie into those? And then we're starting to use new menu items to be almost like an advertising means for movies that are coming up. Like, even though it's very subtle, and I don't think we announced it well, but the samosas were supposed to be sort of a Slumdog Millionaire tie-in idea. And so... that's our direction. I don't know any specifics yet because we're not really announced on what we're going to be doing for the next 2 months.
I have to say the Aqua Teen Hunger Force meal there has to be the ultimate for me. I mean, that was just really well done. Well, very cool. Do you have anything else for Mr. League here?
No, I did notice that Ritz has a whole lot of holiday stuff this year. I was making a list of movies this week, and it's like all the holiday stuff. Except for like Polar Express at IMAX, almost all the holiday stuff is here.
You do the holidays right.
We're doing a lot of everything from.
We're doing a New Year's party for the first time ever. We always closed on New Year's because it was.
I noticed that.
Much to the chagrin of our wait staff, now this is their holiday party as well.
But you've got everything from Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas to Black Christmas, which is like and a Christmas story. So you have the two sides of Bob Clark.
Yes. The Emmett Otter Jug Band Christmas is an annual thing that we do, and we have a big jug band that comes in. It ends up being this crazy little kid concert that it's one of Zach's favorite days of the year. Because Zach, actually, we hire a lot of guys in the programming office that haven't quite matured past 12 or 13 years old in a certain way.
So that's tomorrow, the day after we're doing this?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, tomorrow. Okay.
That's Jug Band Christmas is tomorrow at, I guess, at 1 or noon. You need to go look on the Alamo site and see what time it is. Do not trust me.
I have a two-year-old. Maybe I'll bring her.
See, I want to go, and Chip's allergic to Muppets, so I know that's what else to go with. But, yeah, there's Black Christmas on Terror Thursday, and... one of Chris's favorites.
The Magic Christmas Tree, which is such a great film.
We're trying to turn that into a holiday tradition. I think this is the third year we've shown Magic Christmas Tree. I think it's still working, but even if it doesn't, we love it so much we're going
to
keep on that.
There's so many new brains to infect with that movie, Tim. You have to keep going.
See, we have a person... Chip and I have a tradition now that we are now in our second year. I don't know how many years it takes to make a tradition, but we've been seeing Harold and Kumar. We want to go on the 23rd because we went on Christmas Eve. This is our Christmas movie now, Harold and Kumar. And you have to eat sliders while you're watching it. So you, you know, so, okay, please so do that
the,
next
the
year.
The sliders thing, you're only serving sliders that night.
I think you can order off the menu if you want to as well, but okay. It comes with all-you-can-eat sliders, so okay. You'd have to be sort of a masochist to go beyond that.
All right.
The sliders and the fried pork chop.
So lots to see. That's originalalamo.com. I think we have a couple of non-Alamo things
we
to
do.
Quickly plug.
As I said before, the IMAX theater over at Bob Bullock is showing The Polar Express in 3D.
Nice.
Dobby is showing A Christmas Tale, the French film.
Is it? Okay, cool.
The one, we may be hearing more about that around Oscar.
Oh,
time.
Is it the one with Catherine
Deneuve?
Yes. Her daughter sings a really bad version of Eye of the Tiger in that.
Oh, well, now I really have to see it.
Which, she's actually a really good singer. And she, I think she did it on condition that if she sang the bad version during the film, she got to sing her, with her real voice over the credits.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be interesting to see.
Alamo Lake Creek is showing National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation this weekend.
And then did we talk about the Christmas Story
Marathon? We didn't talk about there's a Christmas Story Marathon. You guys are showing it for Kids Club next week, mm-hmm. I guess Monday through Wednesday. Like they do in the summer, but
okay,
next
like
week.
The kids can't caught it.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I think I caught everything. I'm looking on a list here. Oh, and JCVD is back at Alamo South. This has nothing to do with Christmas, but I finally got Chip to see it last week, and we really enjoyed it. And you should all go see it.
All right.
And well, let the right one is it's still playing too.
That movie should play forever, as far as I'm concerned.
That one did make my top 10.
Yes, absolutely.
That one was in my top 10 too.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's what we've got time for this episode. Tim, mm-hmm. thanks so much for meeting us here at the Ritz. Congratulations on a year of keeping this puppy going.
Well, there'll be many more years to come.
And we will have you back when there's something new and exciting like all you can
there's eat
sliders
to talk about. I was going to say there's always something new.
All right. I am Chris Holland.
And I'm Jet Kernion.
And this is Slackerwood, the podcast. Thanks for listening. And what was that chef's name again?
Elijah Horgan.
And you're very, very sorry.
Yeah, I am.